This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
It was a Pentagon press conference. He was asked whether or not the U.S. sending B-2 stealth bombers from Missouri to fly to conduct a sortie over South Korea and drop what the DOD called inert munitions in a simulated sort of run against North Korea. He was asked whether or not those actions and others on the part of the United States could be understood as provocative. And he said, no, they can't be understood as provocative. And it was dutifully reported as such. And so what you have is a real sort of skewed informational landscape in which the average person listening to such reports can't make heads or tails of what's happening. And so if you're going to actually look at this in a kind of historical perspective, both recent history and longer history, you realize that for what's happened ever since Kim Jong-un has come into his leadership position in North Korea, what you realize is that the U.S. has had a policy of regime change. And, you know, we tend to think of regime change sort of operations and initiatives as being a kind of signature or a hallmark policy of the Bush administration. But actually, we've seen under President Barack Obama a persistence in a kind of U.S. policy of getting rid of those powers that it finds uncooperative around the world. And so after Kim Jong-il passed away, the U.S. and South Korea launched the biggest and the longest set of war exercises that it has historically. And for the first time openly, it exercised something called O-Plan 5029. And this is a U.S. war plan that essentially simulates regime collapse in North Korea, and it also envisions U.S. forces occupying North Korea. And also what's routine during these war exercises, which are, by the way, ongoing right now as we speak, what also happens is they simulate nuclear strikes against North Korea. So these war games are a combination of simulated computer-assisted activity as well as live-fire drills. And last year, the first year of Kim Jong-un's leadership, what happened was a South Korean official was asked about the O-Plan 5029. And he's asked, you know, why are you exercising this regime collapse scenario? And he said, the death of Kim Jong-il makes the situation ripe to exercise precisely this kind of war plan. So it's almost impossible for us in the United States to imagine Mexico and a historic foe of the United States and Russia conducting joint exercises that simulate the invasion of the United States and foreign occupation of the United States. And that's precisely what North Korea has been enduring for several decades.
Professor Christine Hong, professor at the University of California at Santa Cruz. We're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Why, yes, you are in fact listening to Flashpoints on your community radio station, KBOO. Flashpoints is one of those programs that's produced out of KPFA in Berkeley, and Dennis Bernstein brings it to you along with a host of interns and other volunteers at KPFA and producers. Flashpoints, again, one of the shows that we are proud to bring you every weekday so that the community can stay informed, not just here in Portland and provincially in the Northwest, but across the nation, hearing this very important information so that we can, in fact, expand the public discourse. I think that's really a part of what KBOO is about. Right now, we would love to reach our goal for this hour, which, you know, you will be an important part of. Right now, dialing 877-500-5266. That's the magic number, the portal, if you will, into your community radio station. You can be a part of this hub of around which so much of the community depends, for information, for community connections, for cultural reference, for artistic framing. All of these things KABU brings you on a daily basis, produced by volunteers from the community for the community. 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm.
Yeah, thanks, Annie. You know, Annie.
It's okay, Ivan.
Okay,
it's
thanks. Okay. Thank you. We're hearing about North Korea right now, and you know, Kim Jong-il and his son, and it's hard for me sometimes to take North Korea seriously, but sounds like they're getting serious, and you know, you're going to hear about this on KABU, and we ask that you take KABU as seriously as you possibly can, and know that we rely on your support. About 80% of the funding comes from listeners, just like you. You are the listener we're thinking about. You are the listener that we have in our mind's eye right now as we're thinking, projecting out to you. 877-500-5266. Grab your phone, grab your computer, grab anything you can, grab your car, your bicycle, your motorcycle, your feet, your shoes. Come down to 20 Southeast 8th and meet us, meet the station, say hello to everybody here, and our well-trained staff of volunteers will answer your call at 877-500-5266, or of course go online, kboo.fm, and click your support today.
Once again, in terms of the context of what the press is doing, what they are, and they have been now for some time, is stenographers for the State Department. There's no independent reporting about this. You don't see it from the conservative to the liberal press. You do not understand the level and intensity of the so-called war games that happen offshore of North Korea. And that point about, imagine, the North Korea wants to have war games off the coast of the United States. Really, the press plays a key role here in fanning the flames of a very dangerous situation. And let me ask you, how dangerous do you perceive the situation is now?
I think that it's hair trigger dangerous. I think that there are many reasons for this. You know, even the commanding general of U.S. Armed Forces in Korea, James Thurman, said that even the smallest miscalculation could lead to catastrophic consequences. So even he acknowledges that. Even though all blame goes to North Korea, I think that everyone realizes that this is a very volatile situation. What has gone almost entirely unreported in the U.S. media is the fact that China has stepped up its military presence. So you have a kind of situation in which China, it's amassing its forces along the North Korea-China border. It's sending military vehicles to this area. It's conducting patrol flights over this area, and it's also conducted its own live fire drills in the West Sea. So you have a situation that feels very much eerily reminiscent of the Korean War, in which you can envision alliances like the U.S. and South Korea and China in some sort of echo of its lips and teeth relationship with North Korea. I think it's a very dangerous situation that we're in right now. But to your question about the abysmal nature of the reporting and the fact that all that you hear is jingoism, you know, just jingoistic. What I'd say is that one thing that we have to understand is that U.S. and North Korean relations been premised on peace. U.S. and North Korean relations for 6+ decades have been premised on war. And U.S. policy toward North Korea throughout the existence of North Korea has been one of regime change. And so if you understand the basis of relations as war, you realize that war doesn't just get conducted on the level of battles or simulated battles. It gets conducted on the terrain of information. And so when you think about it that way, it's easy to understand why misinformation and disinformation prevails when it comes to reporting of U.S.-North Korea relations.
I noticed that U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry called North Korea's actions dangerous and reckless, and continued, I guess, to be a part of a policy to send the most advanced stealth fighters, weaponry, everything, as if they could name enough weapons that's going to back down the North Koreans. I'd certainly like to get your take on the fact that I'm sure there are many countries in this world right now who are cheering, maybe not in the foreground, but that somebody finally said, no, 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 you can't make believe that we're an aggressor. You can't turn us into an enemy while you're having exercises with 60,000 troops. You can't plan to invade us and us simply stand by. I'm sure there are many countries, many leaders, many revolutionaries in this world who are taking note.
Right, of course. And, you know, that's the other sort of inverted reality. There's the reality of those of us who are in something. I mean, it's not entirely a bubble, but we're in the United States and locked into the limitations of our position here, and then the rest of the world. And, you know, I mean, this is sort of classic U.S. Cold War foreign policy. And, you know, Chalmers Johnson talked about the concept of blowback. Basically, so much of what goes on in our name and U.S. foreign policy is far from pretty. The history of it is, it's a blood-soaked history. And if you pause to think about the lived reality of those people who are unfortunate enough to be on the receiving end of U.S. foreign policy, then you realize that, you know, George Bush had that plaintive cry, why do they hate us? And it was a kind of soul-searching incapacity to understand eruptions of anti-Americanism around the world. But as you say, you know, if we're going to have a sensible approach to even securing a, you know, any kind of common future with the rest of the world, we're going to have to reckon with our foreign policy. And that is something that has yet to be done.
I do get the feeling that U.S. policy is at least in part predicated on keeping a divide between the North and the South.
Well, I mean, let's go back to history. U.S. foreign policy, precisely, you nailed it, has since the inception of something called North Korea and the inception of something called South Korea, the U.S. has been instrumental throughout. And in fact, if you go back to 1945, you realize that scarcely 3 days after the bombing of Nagasaki, two junior U.S. Army officers, Dean Rusk and Charles Bonesteel, retired to a small room armed with nothing more than a National Geographic map of the Korean Peninsula, through which, in a 30-minute session, with absolutely no consultation of any Korean, divided the Korean Peninsula. And this division of the Korean Peninsula at the 38th parallel into North and South, and the creation of a Southern government that had no popular legitimacy, unlike North Korea, which was had a very long anti-colonial history relative to the Japanese. And so what you have is a divided system in which one in three Korean families at that time were separated. And so, you know, I mean, you have a kind of fate visited upon Koreans who were colonized by the Japanese and were not a war aggressor during World War II. And what this essentially ensured was that there would be a civil war of national reunification that would be fought by both sides, North and South. And that tension has really served U.S. purposes. The U.S. claims that it's doing all of these very provocative actions, you know, stealth bombers, et cetera, because it needs to give a show of support to its South Korean ally. But this, of course, fundamentally misunderstands history and the fact that the U.S. from the outset has exploited this division to its own geostrategic advantage.
Christine Hung, before we let you go, Professor Hung, what do we know about what's happening in the South? And is there a grassroots movement that includes unity and shows concern for this kind of U.S. hegemony on the region?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the specter of a nuclear war and a U.S. nuclear strike against North Korea would not just impact those people who live above the 38th parallel. It would inevitably impact the rest of the peninsula environmentally, as well as, you know, in every single which way. I mean, these are two countries that are very much tied through families, communities, etc. So this is an unimaginable outcome. And in fact, you know, when the South Korean people have been polled as to what country they think is the greater threat, the United States or North Korea, they point to the United States. And so in the South, as well as in the North, 60 years represents a full lifetime. And, you know, on your 60th birthday, you have a very sort of special celebration called Hwangap. And South Korean progressive activists have said, okay, we've had 60 years of the war system. 2013 represents the 60th anniversary of the signing of the Korean War Armistice that brought the Korean War to a temporary halt, but did not end the Korean War. So we've basically had six decades of a war system. And they have said 2013 is therefore the first year of Korean peace. We've had a lifetime of war. We're inaugurating a new era, and that is one of peace. But one last thing that I'll say, heaven forbid that the U.S.'s strategy for denuclearizing North Korea, because North Korea has stated that nuclear power is the basis of its sovereignty. But heaven forbid that the U.S., rather than find a way of coexisting with North Korea, actually deploys nuclear power to stop nuclearization. That would be the greatest irony of all.
Professor Christine Hung, professor at the University of California at Santa Cruz. We thank you so much. Please be careful. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
And now you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio on KABU Community Radio. It is one of the very few shows that we do pick up that's a national program that we bring to you because we recognize the value it has in the way that it presents news and information and how important it is for our community to be informed and for the discourse, national discourse, really, to be broadened city by city. People that have the opportunity, the fortunate opportunity to have community radio in their ears